Today on episode 4039 of Grow Great, the podcast, I'm going to talk to you about the four quadrants of growing great businesses and careers. This is going to be cool, kids. You're going to be excited. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Grow Great, the podcast. It's also the web domain, growgreat.com. Find the show notes, which I will tell you today, there's not going to be a whole lot there. By going to episode 4039, it is why we have episode numbers. Today is December the 5th, 2016, although I'm going to tell you, that's not going to matter much because today's episode is going to be well, a lot of episodes I think here are, at least I try to make them that way, what the internet calls evergreen content that's useful no matter when you may consume it. And it really isn't tethered to the fact that today is December in 2016. It's the four quadrants of growing great businesses and careers. So let's just jump right in. This is sparked from conversations that I have had over the last couple of weeks. And as you well know, if you listen to me any length of time, this is kind of how I roll. The podcasts are kind of natural outgrowths of conversations that I've had with real people about real things. And this one was a conversation really about what I do and how I feel about higher human performance. You could plug in to your web browser, higherhumanperformance.com, and it will take you to the exact same place that growgreat.com takes you. And I use that phrase in my work regularly because that really is the work. The work is higher human performance. Yes, there's other kinds of performance. You could have a hot rod car and, okay, well, the engine's got to perform. The drivetrain's got to perform. There's a human behind the wheel driving the car, so there's that. But all of my work is working with people. And yes, sometimes there are processes and things in play as well. So today, what I want to do is kind of give you an overview. I kind of want to take a drone look at these four quadrants, as I call them, and yours may look different, but just bear with me, and I hope that, I hope it'll provide you some insight, and it may provide you a way of figuring out how these can help you in your business and in your career. And I will tell you up front that these are not in any particular order. They are quadrants. And so I'm going to refer to them as quadrant 1, 2, 3, and 4, and if you're looking at a square, and you were to draw an intersecting line vertically and diagonally, and now you break that square into four quadrants. You've got one in the upper left-hand corner. You've got two in the upper right-hand corner, three in the bottom left-hand corner, and four in the bottom right-hand corner. Got it? Now, they're all critical. I am not necessarily putting one of them in the forefront, and so this isn't a numbered list, which is why I prefer the whole quadrant visual. So quadrant one in the upper left-hand corner for me, because this is really at the focal point of what I do, the professional stuff. Get new clients, serve existing clients better, and not go crazy in the process. It is that trifecta of business building that belongs in that first quadrant for me. I think that's true for you too. We have to have new clients. And I don't care if you're in sales or not, but getting new clients, the usual moniker in business parlance for that is sales and marketing, getting new clients, more people in the top end of the funnel and all that stuff. We need to get new customers. Every business requires new customers. Now, there are people that I encounter quite frequently, and they have one big customer. And in this part of the world, there are a number of those kinds of customers. There can be retailers with names that you know and all kinds of people that can be huge, giant kinds of customers. really dangerous, have all your eggs in that basket, but there are companies that operate that way. And so occasionally I'll run into somebody that will say, I don't need new customers. I've got a whale who is a customer. Okay. I'll tip my hat and say, okay, maybe you're an exception to the rule. But for the rest of us who live in this lowland where mere mortals dwell, we need new customers. We have to serve our existing customers better. Nothing irks me more. Well, few things. There may be something. Very few things irk me as much as a company that is getting new customers into the top of the funnel only to hack them off, to serve them so poorly when they've said yes, and now you're like, all the effort, all the time, all the attention and the resources that went to bringing you a customer, and now you're going to drop the ball? It happens time and time and time again. That second part of serving existing customers better has to exist if the first one is going to be successful at all. And they also kind of are congruent, because if we serve our existing clients really well, then guess what they do? Yeah, they bring us new business. They bring us new customers because they're out there telling the world, let me tell you who you should talk to. And we get great referral business. So many of us do a poor job of word of mouth and making sure that we're giving these clients something really positive to say, because we just drop the ball at every turn. And in too many cases, we've got their money. Yeah, okay. So we drop the ball. And it's a very transaction-oriented kind of a philosophy. No, steer clear of that. You need to play for the long term. You need to play for the long haul. So getting new customers, sales and marketing, serving existing customers better is really, in business verbiage, what the world calls processes, workflow, systems. We've got to have things down pretty pat so that there can be a predictable success achieved with every client. It's one of the things that McDonald's brought to the fast food industry in helping create the fast food industry. Now, McDonald's dining experience may not be world class. They're not trying to be. What they are trying to be is predictable. They are trying to meet an expectation. No matter where you are on the planet, you walk into a McDonald's, you know exactly what you're going to get, and that's what you do get. That's serving existing clients better. It's very predictable. You want to be able to do the same thing in your business. You want to be able to do the same thing in your career. You want to have a workflow and systems and processes in place so that you can make that experience be what you promised it would be, hopefully so that you can make it even be better. The third thing is not go crazy in the process. And for me, I just encapsulate leadership and management in that category. Leadership is what we do with people. Management is what we do with processes and systems and workflows. We manage the work. We lead the people. So those are the distinctions that I make, and that's quadrant one. And yeah, absolutely, it's business building. And that's why I label it the trifecta of business building. So for me, in quadrant one is this trifecta of business building. Get new clients, serve existing clients better, and not go crazy in the process. Now, that third one, admittedly, the not going crazy in the process, there's life stuff there. I can sit down with a CEO or a business owner, for instance, who may be going through some personal tragedy. Recently, there have been kind of a rash of deaths that have entered my life. Some people have experienced some real personal tragedy in their life. Got nothing to do with the business. But a CEO who has lost a family member to death, you don't think that's going to impact the business? Of course it is. You don't think that that impacts the going crazy in the process? Absolutely it does. And so sometimes our life, personal things. They do transcend the whole business stuff because we're human. It happens. If you view this trifecta of business building like a three-legged stool, and I do, it's more common than not that one leg, almost all the time, one leg's off the floor. Now, it may just be slightly off the floor. It may be way off the floor. But one leg is almost always off the floor. When you can have all three legs firmly sitting on the ground, then you've got real stability. That's crazy hard to achieve. I'm just being straight with you. It's really, really hard to achieve hitting on all cylinders to get new clients, hitting hard on all cylinders of serving existing clients better, and really being able to land a nail, not going crazy in the process. And every business problem that I have ever encountered fits into one or more of those baskets, if you please. My objective with clients, and I think our objective as business people and in our careers, is to get all three of those on the ground and have them on the ground as long as possible. And if one does come up off the ground, let's don't let it get too high. You can still maintain some stability sitting on a three-legged stool on two legs, but boy, it's a whole lot easier when one leg is just ever so slightly off the floor. But if one gets too far off the floor, yeah, you know what happens. Zip, next thing you know, you're on your butt and things are not good. We don't want that to happen. So when the thing gets out of balance, what we want to do is we want to be able to A, recognize that very quickly, B, take appropriate action to get that thing back on the ground as fast as we can so that we can get back to a position of stability. Absolutely positively, what we cannot afford to do is we can't afford to have two legs off the ground. Can you balance on one? You can. It's stupid hard. And so we've got to get the third leg on the ground. We can't allow two legs to come up. But here's usually what happens. Let's see if you can't relate to this. Getting new customers, that's happening and that's okay. It may not be great, but it's okay. Serving existing customers, we've got some operation problems. We're dropping the ball. We're having issues. We're having distribution issues. We're having warehousing issues. We're having execution issues. And that's driving us crazy. Number one or number two usually compel number three, which means if one comes off the ground, we're at enormously high risk for two coming off the ground. And at the same time, not good, not good at all. So there's admittedly a whole lot of work here, and there's a lot more that I could say, but we're just kind of giving you an overview of these quadrants. And so that's quadrant one. It's the trifecta of business building. It's my whole tagline. It's everything that I do. It's everything that I stand for. It's all these business problems of getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. Now let's go over to quadrant two. Quadrant two in the upper right-hand corner, relationships and results. Everything I do is focused on people. And it's focused on people and it's focused on their performance, which is why the moniker Higher Human Performance. And some of my coaching, I kind of do it under that banner. But really, it could all go under that banner because at the end of the day, it's about you. It's about you, the business owner. It's about you, the business leader. It's about you, the principal, the operator in your firm, in your company, in your organization. And you're having to lead the people and you're having to manage the work. Relationships matter, but results matter. Now, let me give you kind of some true stories, and this will, I think, illustrate it. We have to get them both right. It's not just about results, and it's not just about relationships. They're congruent, and here's why I can easily tell you that. I have in my life, I have sat down with clients, and they have dispatched me to work with somebody on their executive team. And I can go and I can work with somebody on the executive team. And after one meeting, I can deduce some things. And I may go back to the superior and say, describe for me the hiring process. They'll go in great detail, and they may even drag in their HR director, and it'll be, you know, they will have dotted I's and crossed T's, and everything will appear great and wonderful. The person had a good resume. The person interviewed really well. But in watching them in their natural habitat, my conclusion early on could be, I'm not sure you got this right. Seems to me that there is some gap here. I'm seeing some things that just don't feel congruent and don't appear to be congruent with somebody who claims to have the experience that this person claims to have. Another meeting will happen. And over time it becomes, now I have compelling evidence, empirical evidence, that this was a bad hire. This person, what we have here is not a relationship problem. It's not even so much a results problem. It's a capacity problem. We have got an individual who just flat out can't do the work. Well, or they can't do the work well enough for the job that they were hired. So I can sometimes go back to a client and we can vet this all out, because I've been tasked to help this person. I've been tasked to coach this person and help this person elevate their performance. And I can go back then to the sponsor being the person that hired me, the client being the person that I'm serving. Person I'm serving is this person who, in my opinion, now they're in a position that they really don't have any business being in, because they don't have the capacity to do the job or to do the job well. They're the client. So I go back to the sponsor, who typically is going to be the CEO, and say, yeah, let me give you some things to think about. Now, sometimes, and it's very common, and we all do this, because, well, we don't want to get it wrong. And don't worry, I've got a quadrant for this too. It's going to be the fourth quadrant. We'll get to that. But sometimes, very frequently, the person, the business owner, the CEO, well, you know, we want to try this, we want to try that, we want to try this other. I have no problem with that. Client's always in charge. Well, the sponsor's always in charge. And invariably, and they all do the same thing when this happens. They really start focusing on the relationship. And I guess it's just human nature. We really want to get the relationship right. And so they go all in to, we're going to support the person. Maybe we haven't done this. Maybe we didn't do that. Maybe our onboarding was not what it should have been. And they start looking for the things that they can control. I have no problem with that. I got no problem with, hey, let's try to improve the things that we can control. Here's the problem with it from a business and career perspective. It's futile. It's not going to work, because you're marshaling your resources to a place where it's not going to matter. Doesn't amount to a hill of beans. When you have a capacity issue, it's not about relationships. It's not even about results. It's about the fact that you're trying to pound a square peg into a round hole. Pounding it harder isn't going to help. So I say all that to say this. When it comes to relationships and results, the really important thing is to understand capacity, to really understand we have to have the capacity. If we're responsible for other people, the people that we put in those positions, they have to have the capacity. If you don't have that, forget relationships and results. It's just not going to matter. Take a person who does not have the technical prowess needed for some kind of a technical job. You can have a great relationship and you can drive results all you want. You're not going to get the results. The person just can't do it. Now, right now we are in the latter days of this NFL season, and the Dallas Cowboys have won 11 games straight. Nobody saw this coming. Tony Romo gets hurt in the second preseason game of this year. He has not played a game in a long time. And now here he is, he's a $20, $25 million quarterback playing backup, sitting on the sideline holding a clipboard. Why? Well, because a young man got drafted out of Mississippi, and he's a rookie named Dak Prescott, and this kid's on fire. This kid's got capacity. He's proven it. He's won 11 games straight leading this team. There's no capacity issue here. That's clear. Relationships, results. Okay. They're fully in play here. But there are quarterbacks around the league, many who were recruited or drafted much higher than him, who are absolutely struggling. Is there a capacity issue? Well, at least right now there is. At least right now there is. There was a game yesterday, it escapes me, but it was a rookie quarterback. And I was listening to the sports radio this morning, and they were talking about how he threw so many interceptions, but they're like, well, of course he did. You know how many times the coaches asked him to throw the ball? 60. He threw the ball 60 times. Of course he got picked off. He's a rookie, and they put him in a position to throw the ball 60 times. Stupid on their part, says a guy who's never played a down in the NFL, but come on. I think we all recognize you're putting a person in a position for failure. Relationships and results, you don't want to do that, but nor do you want to try to pound a square peg into a round hole. The results matter. But for us to just ballyhoo and beat the drum, results, 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 and we don't think about the relationship that drives those results, and this is where I think coaching, and I'm not talking about mine, I'm talking about yours, I'm talking about CEOs and owners coaching up their own people. I'm the guy who will sit across a business owner or CEO and happily admit to them. In fact, usually in the very first meeting, I tell them, I'm not going to be doing anything that you necessarily couldn't do. I do have some advantages, A, in that I'm not an employee and I'm disconnected and I don't hold these people's jobs in my hand. But as far as me getting to know these people and figuring out what's going on, I got nothing special. You could do that. But most business owners and most CEOs either don't or are not as comfortable doing it. It's really natural for me. It's really easy for me to get to know other people and to sit down and create rapport and yada, yada, yada. The relationships matter. And I could say a ton about that, but I won't. I mean, there's compassion and there's grace and there's empathy and there's rapport and there's caring and there's all of those things that necessitate employees and employers, leaders and employees understanding that there's this mutual concern and care for one another and that results do matter, that we are fostering and we're facilitating these things. And unlike the coach that I mentioned who made this rookie quarterback throw the ball 60 times, that as business owners and CEOs and founders, we want to put people in the best position possible to succeed. And that's our job. You're the steward. You're the chief steward of the company if you're the CEO. It's your job to take care of these people. It's your job to put them in a position where they can succeed. It's your job to own the results by making sure that you're driving the relationship in the most positive way that you can. And that's not standing around singing Kumbaya. That is holding people accountable. That is having a high expectation for people. That's being able to engage sometimes in an uncomfortable conversation because you know that it will best serve this employee. You've got to serve these people and you got to put yourself last. You cannot get wrapped up in, I really don't want to do that. I'm really not comfortable doing that. I may not feel like I'm good at doing it. Is it what they need? Is it the best thing for them? Then you got to do it. You got to find a way. So quadrant two is relationship and results. Now, quadrant three, I can sometimes take some grief over, I'll tell you. I'm not going to take much grief over quadrant one or quadrant two, but it's quadrant three and four where I'm going to get a little bit of pushback sometimes. Quadrant three, lower left-hand corner, is activity and variety. And I put them together in the quadrant because, well, they belong together. You know that it's true. You've experienced it in your own life. You've experienced it when you wanted something done. You have an array of people sitting before you. You need help to do something. And you've got three people in front of you. Two of them are very busy. One of them, they've got all the time in the world on their hands. Do you give it to number three? No, you don't. You absolutely don't. You eliminate number three immediately. Now, it makes complete logical sense that number three has got all the bandwidth. They've got all the white space in their life to be able to devote the time to get this thing done for you. Why do you eliminate them so quickly? You and I both know why. They sit on their butt. That is their mode of operation. They are not accustomed to activity. They are not accustomed to getting things done. And so you know instinctively, they're not going to get this done, so I'm not going to give it to them. You give it to busy people because busy people are accustomed to getting things done. Busy people will make time to get something else done. If they're juggling three balls, throw a fourth and they'll at least try to juggle it. So, activity and variety. I'm going to use my three-year-old grandson, Easton, to illustrate this. So Easton, when he's not even three yet, he gets this what's called a Strider bike. Have you seen these things? They didn't have these things when I was a kid. Picture a bicycle, except it has no wheels. Two tires, handlebars, and a seat. So Easton could kind of dangle his legs Flintstone style, and he could kind of scoot along, and he could lift his feet up if he wanted and then kind of glide the bike around. They call him a Strider. It's a Strider bike. Teaches the kid how to handle the handlebars, teaches a kid balance. Really good tool. Now, by the time Easton is three, mom and dad put him on a bicycle with regular pedals. No training wheels. Man, in no time flat, in minutes. In mere minutes, he's up on this bike and he's riding it and he's got it down. Okay, there's an activity. Variety, it's brand new to him. He'd never done this before. He'd never ridden a bike before. He'd never pedaled a bike before. Well, okay, great. Okay, we're going to stick with that, Easton. You're good at that. That's what you're good at. We're just going to stick with that. Okay, well, Easton, dad's a hockey player. Easton wants to skate. He wants to play hockey. Dad puts him on skates. Okay, he struggles at first. This is variety. Oh, but wait, Easton, you're good at riding a bike. Don't worry about skating. You don't need to skate. You're good at riding a bike. Stick with riding a bike. That's what you're good at. When you're three years old, how do you know what you're good at? Now, I'm going to make an argument here, and this is where sometimes people give me a little bit of pushback. Not a lot, but a little bit. If you're 63, if you're 73, you're telling me you've tried everything? I'm not talking about jumping out of planes, but endeavor, human endeavor. You've tried everything? Think of all the things that some older folks, and I'm joining their ranks, I am in their ranks, you haven't tried. How do you know? How do you know? That's why I think activity and variety are important. I think it's important that we be engaged in activity, that we be really, I hate the word hustle, but, you know, that we really be working it. And by activity, I don't mean motion. And by activity, I don't just mean a lot of mindless movement. I mean intentional. Easton getting on that Strider bike was intentional. Easton moving to a bike that had pedals on it was intentional. That wasn't just mindless motion. Variety, now on skates, turned into a pretty good skater. Okay, well, what else? What else might he be able to do? Who knows? He's three. But why is his life different? Does turning 53 or 63 or 73 make it different? Not really. Probably only in the sense of your own bravery and maybe your opportunities. You know, you might have to work a little bit harder to seize an opportunity. I was reminded, Mike Rowe, who's the voice for Deadliest Catch, and he was involved in the show Dirty Works, and he's this internet star now, and many of us love him and follow him, and I do. But I remember years ago hearing his story about being in opera, and by his own admission, he says, I didn't have any interest in opera. What he did have interest in is he had interest in joining the Screen Actors Guild, and he realized that singing opera, which, you know, he's listening to this aria and has no idea what the language is, but he's trying to learn these lines, these lyrics, that if he could get the card to perform in his hometown at the time of Baltimore, that if he could get that card, that it was a division of SAG, the Screen Actors Guild. And so he could join the union. So it was activity with a purpose. It wasn't activity born from, I've got a passion for opera. He didn't have a passion for opera. I think he learned to appreciate it and whatnot, but he wasn't a kid that grew up thinking, I want to sing opera. No, what he wanted is he wanted the union card. Activity. Activity and variety. It matters. I think of all the things that as human beings that we haven't tried and that we might be good at. Now, let me tell you, here's where some of the pushback I get. Some of the pushback I get is when the conversation turns to quitting. I'm rather fond of quitting myself because sometimes quitting is beneficial. Let me illustrate. You knew I would. I know people, I've met people, you probably have too, and maybe to some degree we are like them in that people, we can all fall in love with an idea. We can all kind of romanticize being something that we aren't. For instance, a person may want to be an artist. Great, wonderful. They may enroll in some night class, some art class. This art class may be every Tuesday night. By the time they get to the third week of art class, they hate it. Because they finally come to the conclusion they were in love with being an artist. They're just not in love with creating art. Well, how can you do that? Well, you can't. If you're going to be an artist, you have to create art because that's what artists do. But you're in love with the idea of being an artist. You're just not in love with creating the art. And 3 weeks into the art class, you really want to quit. And you don't care that you lost $200 signing up to take the class. You just don't want to do this anymore because it's not fun. Well, you didn't know that 3 weeks ago, but now you do. Is there something wrong with quitting? I don't think so. Quit. Learn from it, but quit. Because you're in love with being an artist. You don't want to create art, though. I'm a perfect illustration when it comes to the guitar. I have been in love with being able to play the guitar for as long as I can remember. It'd be great to be a guitarist. It'd be great to be a musician. Guess what? I've owned guitars for over 30 years. I've got one sitting 10 feet from me in a case that I can see. I can't play it. I've never been able to play it. Why? Because I don't care enough to do it. It doesn't mean enough to me to do it. I don't have the discipline to do it. I don't have the strong desire to do it. In my head, it's kind of a romantic notion, and it's kind of cool, and I think it'd be awesome to be able to do it. I don't want to pay the price to be able to do it. And up to this point in my life, I have not paid the price to do it, and as a result, I can't do it. So there, how many times does that apply to your life? Now let's talk about variety, because I think action and variety matter. I'm busy as a one-armed paper hanger. I'd love to tell you that everything that I do brings in dollars. It doesn't. In fact, I'll go you one better and tell you that a lot of the activity that I'm involved in, there is no payoff. And with many of the activities, there's no payoff in sight as far as money goes. But I think the activity matters, and I think the variety matters. I'm involved in a number of things that have not one thing to do with making money, and I won't bore you with the details because they don't matter, but I want you to think about your own life, and I want you to think about the things that you may be involved in. It may be helping the kids school teacher. It may be volunteering at school. It may be church work. It may be nonprofit kind of work. It may be charitable work. It may be all kinds of things. For me, it's all of those and then some others. And all of that activity for me matters. And I think it matters for you too, because if we think about these relationships that we talked about in quadrant two, I've got a lot of relationships that really focus around a central thing. We're not tethered together because, well, I genuinely like you. You genuinely like me. We've got tons of things in common and we just really enjoy hanging out with each other. No. A lot of my activity and variety is driven, and I suspect yours is too, is because there's something else. There's some overarching thing. Let me give you one illustration because this will help. I owned for over 16 years a brother and a sister, White West Highland Terriers. They are known as Westies dogs. Bought these from a breeder after a full year of vetting and looking at things and figuring things out from a breeder in Houston. And I'm here in Dallas. And we lost Rocky, the brother, last year. And back in September, we lost Rosie. We lost them to old age. I reached out to the vet. We'll call her Dr. Kay. Her name is Kay McGuire. Kay was one of the partners in the breeder of this family that Rocky and Rosie came from. When we lost Rosie, feeling blue and depressed and kind of longing to connect with these people who had helped bring her into the world and Rocky too, I reached out to her to let her know. And through a few events and circumstances, I got introduced to an organization that she's a big part of that is devoted to the health of these dogs, this particular breed of dogs. It's the Westie Foundation of America, WFAA. WFAA. That's a radio TV station here. WFA, Westie Foundation of America, WFA. And one thing led to another, and I gave them some ideas on how they might create compelling content, which hopefully would drive up donations. But their whole mission is the health of this particular breed of dog. Now, I come to it not as a vet, not as a dog breeder, not as a person who shows dogs. I come to it as a guy who's owned two dogs. They were pets. They were part of the family for over 16 years. That's where I come from. I don't know these people from Adam. And if it weren't for this particular breed of dog and our united collective love of this dog, I'm sure there's a whole lot of things that we just absolutely positively do not have in common. But it's our purpose, it's our overarching shared experience of our admiration and concern and love for this particular breed of dog that brings us together. Activity, variety. Well, there's some variety. There's not any money component to this, but it's a purpose that's reasonably important to me. And what brought me to the table was a pet owner. What may bring somebody else to the table is because they're a vet. Others may be breeders. Others may be research scientists. Others may be people that show this particular breed of dog. Activity variety. I'm going to really encourage you, be active, be proactive. Take on what you can take on. Now, I'm not advising that this isn't about workaholism. This is about being a person of action. This is about taking on action. And this is about not being worried about trying something else, taking on something else. I believe in, hey, if they say variety is the spice of life, who am I to argue? I think there's something to that. And I know that we live in a day and age where every activity that you involve yourself in needs to have a monetization component. I just don't buy it. I'm involved in some other stuff that, you know, I won't belabor that may over time lead to some income stream, but that's not why I'm in it. And I don't know, it puts you in a position to be associated with other people, to be more well-rounded. And I think it improves your business and I think it improves your career. It broadens the scope of relationships and people. So quadrant 3, activity and variety. Now quadrant 4, and let's put a bow on this. Quadrant 4 probably creates not the most conscious resistance, but the most practical resistance. And I call quadrant 4 repentance. Yes, that's a spiritual term, but you can use any other term you get. I'll give you a synonym that you might be more comfortable with. Correction. If I had some piece of hard money for every time somebody said to me about a spouse, a coworker, a family member, a close friend, somebody in their life that means something to them, it would absolutely break their teeth to have to apologize. I'd be a rich man. The number of people on the planet who are not able to own their mistakes and the number of people on the planet who will not admit and confess that they were wrong is astounding to me. The culprit is hubris. The culprit is pride. And the stupid thing is, those of us who are in those people's lives, it's clear to us. We see it. They're not fooling anybody. They're only fooling themselves, hanging on to the pride and refusing to admit that it was their fault and they need to own it. No, it's just much more comfortable for them to point fingers at us or anybody else and blame us, blame other people. If not for other people, their life would be great and wonderful. Here's a news flash. We all need repentance. We all need correction. It is the life spring of improvement. I get it wrong so many times, it's not even funny. Nothing wrong with getting it wrong. Now, I have a particular affinity for getting it wrong by being proactive, and I have a personal, I don't know what the word would be, but I can get really irked at myself and others when it's getting it wrong because we didn't do something. Neglect is one thing, and that's a horrible thing. I would rather get it wrong because I tried something and it failed than you got it wrong because you sat there and you did nothing, which is why quadrant three is so important. Activity and variety. Take action. You're not going to get it right. Eason's going to get on that bike and he's going to start pedaling, and he didn't master it the very first time. He mastered it within minutes, but it took minutes. Dak Prescott got into the very first game, and I'm not saying he got it all right, but boy, he got it more right than not. He did exactly what Easton, the three-year-old, did. He course corrected. He figured it out in real time. And that's repentance. That's correction. You're not going to get it right. And when you don't get it right, that's fine. Fall on the sword. But turn the page, move on, fix it, course correct. Don't keep doing the same thing that you did to result in the failure. Fix it. Own it. A big, big part of quadrant four is self-awareness. And if I could give you a gift, that would be the gift to know yourself, really understand yourself. I do. That sounds arrogant, but I'm just going to tell you, I'm very self-reflective and I get feedback from people. I ask for feedback from people. I want the feedback. And I know that I've only got a few superpowers. They're not super, but sounds cool. I keep telling my wife, I want a cape. I need a yellow cape. My superpowers are very few. But I also know I got enormous limitations. Now, I don't get so focused on the limitations, but I own them. I am by nature an introvert. Yep, I am. Give me the opportunity to go to some function where there's a lot of people, or let me stay home with a good book. I'm staying home. Sorry. I mean, I just am. That would be my preference. Now, I know myself well enough to know that sometimes, okay, I need to go. I need to go out. I need to, and it's not that I dislike people. I'm not socially awkward. I'm not backward. I'm not shy. I'm not bashful. But left to my natural state, I'm going to stay in the yellow studio and I'm going to read a book. As opposed to going to a party of 20, 30, 200, 300. I mean, it doesn't matter. The number is insignificant to me. I'm very comfortable being alone. So that's my natural state. Well, I know that about myself. Now, I also know that I'm off the charts in empathy and rapport building and reading people. I'm good at. No, I'm terrific at. I am. It's a superpower. Now, not everybody's attracted to that, and I'm smart enough to know that. So part of this correction, I'll tell you a huge part that's happened to me over my lifetime. Early on in my career, I could be involved with somebody. I could be maybe trying to sell somebody something. I could be trying to make some business thing happen. And, you know, it was a game. I wanted to make this connection happen. And it wasn't that I was so full of myself. It was just, I guess it was more of a challenge and a game to me. Well, I let that go years ago. I don't even bother with that anymore because I can know that I can get somebody on the phone, and more often than not, within 2 minutes, the rapport is there and it's easy, but not always. Now, the younger version of me, I would have continued and kind of pressed, right? Trying to make this thing, I'm going to crack this egg. Because it was a game. It was a challenge. Well, I gave that up, and here's why I gave it up. Number one, I gave it up because the present experience is not only not good for me, it's not good for them either. So why keep on? Number two, there's other people out there that I could connect with, and why waste time here? I call it pushing water up a hill. Why keep trying to do that? Pushing water up a hill is a hard thing to do. Why do it? Just why do it? So now I can get somebody on the phone and very quickly I can tell this isn't going to go anywhere. And I want to make it as pleasant and as profitable a conversation as I can make it, primarily for the other person. And then I'm trying to get, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. It was great talking to you. Have a great day. And I move on. And it's not difficult for me. 20 years ago, completely difficult. Totally difficult. That's a correction that I made because it wasn't working. Why keep doing what's not working? I joke around with people all the time, and sometimes people think that I am just joking, but I'm not. I'm being very serious. And you could ask clients. I frequently will sit across from a business leader and they'll throw some problem. Have you encountered that problem before? Yeah. What have you tried in the past? Well, I've tried this and I've tried that and I've tried the other. Have any of those things that you've tried, have they ever, has between this, that, and the other, has one worked better? Yeah. Okay. Well, here's my professional advice. Do more of that. Quit doing those other two that don't work. Do the one that works. Yes, they'll chuckle and they'll laugh. And I do mean it kind of humorously, but you and I both know that that's true. And that's true in your life. That's true in your career. That's true in your business. It's high time that we do more of what works and we stop doing what ain't working. And that's quadrant four. Repentance. If you don't like the spiritual term, call it correction. So to recap here, kids, quadrant one, business building trifecta, the trifecta of business building. Get new clients, serve existing clients better. Don't go crazy in the process. We got to work hard to keep all three legs on the floor. And we very quickly have to recognize we got a leg coming up. We got to get on that. We can't afford the instability. That's quadrant one. Quadrant two, relationships and results. Relationships and results, they matter. Yep, a big career and business builder driver for sure. Quadrant three, activity, variety. Be a person of action. Take action. Be proactive. Don't be neglectful. Don't sit on your butt. Don't be guy number three. Three guys in front of you, number three, well, he's got all the time in the world. Let's give it to him. No, you're not going to give it to him. You're giving him nothing. You want a person who is able to gain responsibility. That means you're a person who is a person of action, and that means you get stuff done. And variety. Yeah, there may be an outlier, and there may be something to the one-trick pony. Just make sure it's a great trick. But better to have variety. Again, the reminder, think of my 3-year-old grandson. How do you know if he can ride a bike? Well, he can ride a bike. Okay, great. He can ride a bike. Well, let's make him the best bike rider we can be. Yeah, but what about skating? Well, he doesn't need to skate. Look at him. He's a good bike rider. But he tries to skate. Now he can skate. What else can he do? Here's a better question for you, for me, and for him. What can't he do? What doesn't he want to do? Variety matters. Don't neglect it. And quadrant number four, repentance, correction. When you're off track, and you're going to be off track some, In fact, I'll go you one better. You're probably going to be off track quite a bit. Get back on track. I've used this illustration. I'm going to end the show today by giving you this illustration. And it's a little bit dated now, but I'm going to give it to you anyway, because I think it matters. When CD players first came out, they were a single beam CD player. CD players don't even much exist anymore. Well, they do, but not really. We've gone to MP3s, but there was one beam, and that one beam would read the information on that disc. It would play the music. Well, these things skipped like crazy. Well, what's up with that? People would return CDs like mad Russians because, well, this CD's defective. It skips. It wasn't the CD that was defective. It was the player. The player had one beam whose job was to read the information. And if that beam got knocked off track, guess what? Nothing to correct it. Enter, hold for it now, drum roll please, enter the three-beam CD player. Well, what is that all about? Picture the one beam designed to read the information off the disc. Now picture a beam to the right of it and a beam to the left of it. Guess what their jobs were? That's right. Keep that center beam on track. All of a sudden, CD returns plummeted. Nobody was returning CDs anymore. Why? Because the CD players were playing the track correctly. They had these correcting beams that engineers figured out. We need to keep that center one on track. You have got to do the same thing with your career and your business. You've got to be willing to own your mistakes. If you're the CEO and the owner, the founder, you got to own the mistakes of your organization. It's not about putting blame wherever you feel like it. Let's fix it. Let's fix it. Let's move on. And I'll tell you, you'll really rise in the trust factor when you own the mistakes and you don't throw your team under the bus. That's never profitable. So there it is, the four quadrants of growing great businesses and careers. It was a little longer episode. I would apologize for it, but nah, I'm not going to. In a future episode or four, we'll dive into each of those. I'm not going to promise you it'll be the next time, but it might be. Let me know how you feel about these four quadrants. You can go to the website, growgreat.com, plug in episode 4039, and I will have a graphic there showing you these four quadrants. I'd like to hear from you how you feel about this. Please go to the website. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? I'm pleased, please, please, pleased that you came and spent some time with me today and clicked play. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.